Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour. This is for September 3rd, 2020. First of all, a major announcement here. This came in from a listener, and I want to read this. It's a call for help in Southwest Louisiana. So I'm going to just read this verbatim. It says, "Hello, I wanted to give everyone an update on Southwest Louisiana right now." This comes from a listener, emailed in on the 31st of August. It says, "Prayers greatly needed. I am getting this report from people who live there. I have relatives there. There are 500,000 people who have been displaced. Cameron Parish received the greatest damage. All the electric poles north of Lake Charles to many Louisiana are down. To many is a town in Louisiana. All of the telephone poles are down. So that's over 80 miles of area that have no electric poles at all. They're not even standing. That means they will not have electricity for many weeks. The main road between St. Charles and DeRuyter, Louisiana, still have trees down. People have no electricity, no water, no way to wash clothes or to take a bath, no stores, especially no gas for generators. The relief agencies are setting up in Lake Charles right now, but have not made it to the smaller towns yet. If any of you live close enough to assist, this is what they need. I'm planning to go next week." This is what the listener is writing here. I'm reading once again. Okay, number one, so what they need assistance, people to pick up debris. Number two, people to cut up fallen trees and move them. Number three, gas, diesel for generators. No stations are open, so there's no petroleum products available. Number four, people who can put tarps on people's houses. Number five, water, food, tarps, gas cans, wheelbarrows, chainsaws. All the stores in the 100-mile radius have been stripped of all of these supplies. And so anyway, that's a letter from a listener. Let me read the last. It says, "All stores in a 100-mile radius have been stripped of these supplies. If you want to donate, please contact Cajun Navy," that's C-A-J-U-N, Navy, Mercury One, Samaritan's Purse, and the Salvation Army. Thank you. Okay, so that is from a listener, and I hope that some of you can respond to this. This is a terrible situation and a preventable situation. This was a manipulated storm for the destruction of the United States rice crop, and these people are collateral damage. Okay, if things sound a little bit different, I have an echo here. I'm not in my usual studio. You might hear outside noise. I'll just tell you what happened. Today I had an interview with Robert David Steele, and exactly when I went, I mean, we were counting down to go live, a video recording that he's putting out, and it's about the food shortage, imminent food shortage. Exactly at that moment, my internet went kawoom, it just shut down. So I picked up everything I had. I moved to a completely different location where I happen to be right now. And I set up, we rearranged to have this recording starting again. And exactly when we were setting up once again to start recording, the electric went down where I moved to. And he texted me on my phone, which was still operating offline. He said, "You got enemies." But anyway, that was well known, if anybody was listening to our conversations, that we were planning on exposing the weather control systems that are run out of the Boulder, Colorado, deep state military operation. I'll be talking more about that tonight. Anyway, if you want to see that video, Robert David Steele's site, you will be able to find that pre-recorded. It's with J.C. Cole. He was having some technical issues, too. They were of a different kind. But anyway, the whole issue there is that the straight line winds in Iowa, the Hurricane Laura, for example, was a designer storm designed to destroy the United States rice crop. 50% of the rice crop comes from Arkansas. I talked about this last week, I believe. And Hurricane Laura was designed to dump and destroy that crop, which is it literally did. And the rest of the United States rice crop comes from eastern, southeastern Texas and western, southwestern Louisiana, exactly where these people had their lives destroyed. And so this is criminal behavior, and I hope this message gets to, it is getting to high levels in Washington, D.C., and it's time that this criminal behavior of manipulated storms against the public is stopped, because it's being done to destroy you, the American public, the American farmer, destroy the food chain, the mechanism of distribution of food. And then you have clowns like the governor of California, who's claiming he has the power to shut down food harvesting in his state, which provides 50% of the fruit and nuts and berries to the United States market, and about 30% of the vegetables. So criminal behavior at the highest level, and of course he's blaming it on a spike in COVID-19 cases, which it has been proven is based on false tests, false positive tests. Okay, so I'm going to move on. There's a lot of people covering that. Just wanted to mention Robert Kennedy Jr. Was in Berlin on the 29th of August and gave a speech in front of, they estimated 100,000 Berliners had gathered there without masks to protest the activity of the government of Germany. And then I believe it was the next day on August 30th that David Icke gave a talk at Trafalgar Square, and I've heard various estimates of, say, 18,000 people. Britain showed up without masks, etc. And he gave a short but very effective speech. He's the guy that really has been on top of the getting down to the core of the very few people who run the world through the Bank of London, and which is a branch of the Rothschild World Bank, etc., etc. So very, very much worthwhile listening to those two people give very monumental talks that are, the world is waking up, and it's time. Literally, I have heard people, and I'll be blunt, talking about the guillotine, taking it, and these people, Bill Gates and Melinda, you know, chop their heads off. I'm sorry. I'm serious. And, you know, hunt these people down. They are causing major damage in the world. They're psychopaths. Looking at the, you know, the pedophilia that's running rampant in the higher levels of government, including the United States, both Democratic and Republican parties. So, you know, it's time to rout out this evil that is operating and running the world and get rid of it once for all. Because if you go back to the Russian Revolution, the Holodomor starvation in Ukraine in the early 1930s, it's the same people, it's the same group of people, and it's time to hunt these people down, rid the world of them, so we can all live in peace again. The least of which, the next story, the CDC, you probably heard this, I'm going to repeat it quickly, of the 180,000 or up to some estimates, 200,000 supposed deaths from COVID-19, 94% of them have been reclassified as death due to comorbidity, and 80% of the people that died allegedly from COVID were over the age of 90. And so clearly, and they had extenuating circumstances, including diabetes, pneumonia, heart failure, etc. These are the ones that were classified. And remember, Dr. Johnson from Minnesota came out and he said he's being pressured by the CDC to falsify death certificates. They rewrote the death certificate so that it had a place on there that you would check, and those were all counted as COVID deaths due to COVID. So really what they're saying now is that only about 9,000, and this number has varied from 9 to 11,000, depending on who's counting, actual deaths from COVID-19. And I would say that those are very questionable also. because they were administering respirators for the people on COVID, and the people were dying from the respirators, from being put on a respirator, blowing out their lungs, basically. And then they would say those people died of COVID-19. And anybody who had tested positive with the fake PCR test, and a lot of people are covering this now. I said this in the very beginning. I said this in February. People are starting to wake up and call this test and for what it is. It's a fake. It does not tell you that you have COVID-19. It's being used, and the data is being skewed. Now they're just talking about COVID spike in COVID cases, not deaths. In fact, the deaths have leveled off to zero. There were fewer deaths this year in the time period from February to right now. There were fewer deaths this year in the United States than last year, which basically tells you that the medical industry was killing people with their treatments, etc. Like people who had cancer are actually living longer now without the treatments, because also the SIDS cases, the sudden infant death syndrome cases, have gone down to zero because kids are not being vaccinated. And that was one of the things that Robert Kennedy Jr. was talking about in Berlin, was the vaccination criminal worldwide organization that's forcing vaccinations down people's throats. Which brings up another topic. Now, last week I talked about this. It's called chlorine dioxide. And in third world countries, this is being used for all kinds of remedies. And I mean, the list is very long. And this is not simply like home remedies. These are remedies that are being used by doctors. Now, this is getting to be an old story. And what's happening is it's been being used effectively against COVID-19 in a lot of third world countries. You have to understand, they don't have the money to put out for high fancy, for example, vaccinations and things like that. So they're used to using methods that really don't cost much. And when they find something that's effective, they continue to use it. So this has been used for diabetes, for Alzheimer's. It's been used for cancer and a whole laundry list. I mean, a really long list of other things. And as I said, including COVID-19. Now, since I'm multilingual, I'm able to listen to a lot of this in the native tongue of the places where this is being used. And it's very, the doctors that are using this are very good doctors. Now, I want to tell you something, and it may shock you. I've talked about this on my show before. But the United States is like 37th in the world for health care. And there are countries that are very high up on the list in the single digits that you wouldn't believe. These are real third world countries that have much better health care for the individual than the United States. The United States medical system was designed and built to make doctors wealthy. And that's one of the major downfalls. And that's why you cannot take a system like in the United States and try and put it into a medical system for all, because it's simply too expensive. What I've proposed is that you develop a series of clinics in which the doctors volunteer part of the time, and then you have other levels of, say, nurses, practitioners, etc., that do common things. Like if little Johnny or Susie cuts their finger, you don't need a doctor, excuse me. Or if somebody, you know, say the flu's going around and people are getting sick, they got flu, they go to the doctor. You don't need a doctor for that. And so in the foreign countries, what happens is you go to a clinic, but you may not see a doctor. You might see a doctor for just a minute, or you might not see a doctor at all, because these other practitioners take care of the more common issues. Okay, but anyway, back to chlorine dioxide. Now, this is not Clorox. Let me make this very clear. This is not Clorox bleach. And it's a very simple chemical. It's ClO2. And so it's, let's look at some other things that have that O2 on them. Silver dioxide, which is the Len Horowitz, Dr. Len Horowitz, that he sells. It's atomic silver, not colloidal silver, which is finely ground silver, which really is not going to be used by your body at all. But so this is not colloidal silver, but it is atomic silver with two oxygen atoms attached. Chlorine dioxide is a chlorine atom with two oxygens attached. Hydrogen peroxide is what I was talking about using for COVID, which clinically has been proven to kill COVID on contact for cleaning surfaces, etc. Plus, it's food grade available, and you can drink it in proper proportion, and people do. You can buy it in the health store. You can buy it at the food store, hydrogen peroxide, and it's the same. It's H2O2, so it's got that O2 on there. Okay, so now the thing I want to mention this week about chlorine dioxide is that the people who are in foreign countries talking about this being used for COVID-19 are being attacked, just like the people in the United States who are talking about hydroxychloroquine, which, again, there you're dealing with a series of chemicals which are very similar. And so isn't it amazing that these remedial methods that have been used for literally, some of them, up to a century. And once again, I'll mention that chlorine dioxide is used to purify water. It is a internationally recognized treatment for water. You can put it in a few drops of it in water, and it will purify, it'll kill the viruses and the bacteria in water and make it safe to drink, even though you might have dirt in there, or you might have, you know, maybe you'll pour the water through a shirt or some really, primitive form of filtration. But if you can kill the bacteria in there, that's usually what the problem is, not your body filtering out this sand or grit or whatever. So anyway, it's universally used for purification of water. When you go to the chemical safety webpage on chlorine dioxide, of course, as with anything, it has to be used within the proper proportion. And there is a method for mixing it. And they know the proportion that should be used and the dosage to work with COVID-19. Okay, so anyway, that's all I'm going to say about that this week. But I'm doing some more research on this, and every time I look around, I hear more and more stories of people who had terminal cancer, very bad diseases, lifelong diseases that they couldn't cure. Fungus, for example. A lot of times people with cancer have issues with fungus also. And so anyway, I'll be talking more about this in the future. And also, by the way, my radio shows, I post on my own webpage. So I don't have to deal with all of this YouTube garbage or being censored by YouTube or Facebook or any of those social media. And of course, I don't make a lot of money, and I'm not being funded by these organizations who can cut you off in a minute. So I just post on my little webpage. I have my little radio show. It goes out on shortwave, has been for 20 years. I don't have sponsors. I don't have advertisement. I don't sell flashlights and other stuff. And it's good that some people do, but that's not me. Okay, so anyway, I get to say what I want on my program, and I don't owe anything to anybody. I pay for my own airtime, and that comes out of any benefit I get from selling products. I don't take donations, if somebody buys something off my webpage, they get something very good in return, absolutely world-class, high-quality products, and that's what they get in return, something that actually benefits them. Okay, so I just want to make mention here of something called fear. And this is something, I listened to the Robert Kennedy discussion, I listened to David Icke discussion, and I listened to some other people. But what's interesting is everybody is becoming aware that what is being used to control the public is fear. And it turns out that Goering, this is Hitler's right-hand man, the man who was in charge of the Luftwaffe, World War II Germany, etc., that was going out to conquer the world, he said very clearly that it doesn't matter what form of government you have, it doesn't matter the economic system, nothing matters. But the way to control the public is very simple formula. It's age old, and it works every time. It's called fear. If you can drum up fear in the masses, you can make them do all kinds of things that they would never do otherwise. They will turn in their neighbors. They will turn on their neighbors. They will turn on their own family members because of fear. And you also see this in foreign countries. But this allows fascism to prosper, because what is fascism? It's a small group of people who take control and move an agenda into the public for massive control. And that's what's going on today. So fascism is trying to take over, and they're using fear. Now, there are groups of people, politicians, and what they want to do is they want to destroy the country, because out of it, they are hoping to gain power. And so the main impetus is fear. So stop listening to the evening news. Stop listening to the mainstream media. All they do is they're fear porn peddlers. That's what they do. And their job is to create fear, whether it's the stock market, the unemployment rate, COVID-19, climate change, whatever it is, they will ride the wave of fear to their positions of power. Okay, so anyway, the trick is not to buy into the fear. And today we have politicians. Now understand, the politicians have been put there because they will promote the fear agenda to shut down the movement of food and the harvest. They will destroy everything, and once they get, they're like a pack of wild dogs. Once they get the smell of blood, they go crazy, and that's what's going on now. You have these people rising up into positions of power where they have much more power than they ever dreamed of having, and now they're not going to let go. They're going to keep this thing going. They're going to starve out the country while they enjoy a big plate of food. And then the other thing they do is they turn it on to, oh, it's affecting the blacks and the Latino population. And the children, let's all have a lot of bleeding heart over the children are not eating as good. And so what they want to do is they want to centralize the food production and distribution in the United States. And that is called communism. That is called the Communist Manifesto. It's what they do. They get into energy, it's basically food, water, energy, health services, transportation. Anything that the public needs, they get in the middle, and then they use these excuses, climate change, COVID-19, and on and on and on. The Russians, the Chinese are coming, everybody's coming to take us over. And then they get control, and they're not going to let that go because they are in their glory. their glory. And what do? They use fear. And who's the most vulnerable to fear? It's typically the mom in the house. And so, you know, she's so afraid that the kids are going to get COVID and they're going to bring it home. Fear, fear, fear. And, you know, this is the whole idea of a world pandemic, to make the whole world fearful so that you will do things. You'll go out and beg for that vaccine when the vaccine is not going to do anything. And then next year they're going to come along and say, well, this year there's a new COVID-19. Maybe they'll call it COVID-20. And you need another vaccination. This thing's going to go on and on and on. Okay, just want to talk about the Iowa drought. This is a man-made situation. And the ability to create droughts, it's much more difficult to create rain than it is to create a drought with weather manipulation. And this is, once again, to destroy the American food production. The Hurricane Laura, when manipulated storm, I talked about this last week, was designed to destroy the United States rice crop. Okay, this week I want to talk about, I'm back to California, and of course I deal with the energy industry because of the wing generator. It's a product line. It goes from 2 kilowatts up to 250 kilowatts for the farm and ranch models. But California just put out a mandate. I call it Failifornia, because everything they do is just crazy. It's like a friend of mine used to say, there was a cartoon on called Tennessee Tuxedo, and he'd start out the beginning of the cartoon with this great idea, and by the end of the cartoon, everything was all upside down and backwards. And frankly, I've never seen the cartoon. It just sounds like a funny skit, kind of like the Roadrunner, you know, and the Wiley, what do you call it, the Roadrunner in the Fox, or the Coyote, I'm sorry, the Coyote, those cartoons where the coyote is always messing up, no matter what. He always tries to outsmart the Roadrunner, but never does. That's the governor of California. Okay, so anyway, the California Public Utility Commission, under the watchful eye of Governor Newsom, what a complete moron, appropriated $437 million, and what they want to do is they want to install 38,000 car charging stations. Well, if you do the math, pretty simple, that comes out to $11,500 each. Now, I sell car charging stations along with the wing generator. And at the quantity they're talking about here, 38,000, they're going to get these charging stations for around, I'd say, around $2,000 a piece. And so that means that $9,500 out of each one of those 38,000 charging stations is pork. Simple pork. Excess money that's going to be divvied up, and now they're giving this money to Southern California Edison, a private company. And so the PUC is taking money out of the pockets of Californians, and they're going to put in 38,000 car charging stations, which might sound like a good, beneficial thing for the public. But a lot of people are going to take this money and stick it in their pockets. So anyway, what I want to do is go through some calculations. I did this last week and the week before, talking about ridiculous situations. What I talked about before was the fact that you would have to literally pave the city of Los Angeles with solar panels and then have incredibly large amounts of batteries to store up the energy just to run the air conditioning in LA. And it would come out to the tune of about $50 trillion in cost, and it would have to be replaced in 10 years. Not a good deal. Okay, so anyway, let's take a look at the 38,000 charging stations in California. So the initial bill is $437 million. They want to put these in poor neighborhoods to facilitate car charging in poor neighborhoods. Well, let me tell you something. There's not a lot of poor people that are going to be running out and buying new Teslas or other kinds of electric vehicles. It's usually middle class and upper middle class. So right off the bat, they're not putting these in the places where they're going to be most usable. But now here's the issue. How much electricity are these going to take? Because remember, in my discussion last week, it was very clear that California, especially down in Los Angeles County, was shy about a gigawatt of energy. You know, that's production. That's the power output of, say, two average-sized nuclear power plants. That's how much energy they're short right now. That's why they have rolling blackouts, because they don't have enough energy to provide with the people out there, because they've been taking all the money and sticking it in somebody's pocket. Okay, so the if you take a average car charging station, they run around 7 kilowatts each. And so if you were going to put solar panels there, because they don't have the electricity to power these 38,000 car charging stations, and so they would have to install it. So let's imagine that you were going to put in solar panels. The solar panels to run one car charging station, now they're going to put in 38,000, the amount of solar panels to run one station, which is 7 kilowatts, would be $58,000 at today's going rate, around $350 per solar panel installed. And then you would have to buy the batteries, and that's another $78,000 in batteries. So we're talking about $140,000 for the setup, the solar panels and the batteries, to operate one car charging station for 24 hours. That's on a sunny day. Now, if it's cloudy out, you would need a lot more. But we're just assuming it's going to be bright and sunny in California all the time. Okay, so that means, by the way, that turns out to be 160 solar panels. And these are 250-watt solar panels, if you want to be very specific. So it's per station around $140,000. So now you take this and you multiply this by 38,000 stations, and you come up to a tidy little sum of $5 billion. Actually, $5,320,000,000. But what the heck? We'll just round that down to make it look better for old Governor Newsom out there. So we're talking $5 billion to install the solar panels to run these 38,000 stations. But the problem is that some of these stations will not be the low charge rate stations at 7 kilowatts, but they'll be what they call rapid charge. So let's imagine that they have a mix of these car charging stations and that they have 20,000 of them, 7 kilowatt regular overnight charging stations, and then 18,000 of them will be the rapid charge, which take 45 kilowatts of energy to operate. So if you add this up, the 20,000 charging stations at 7 kilowatts and then the 18,000 charging stations at 45 kilowatts, you end up once again literally with a gigawatt of energy required to run these charging stations. So the bottom line of running these numbers is that they're going to install 38,000 car charging stations, but they don't have any electricity to put in them to run and actually charge the cars. They're going to be putting them in low-income neighborhoods where the people don't have enough money to go out and buy an electric car, because they're probably having a tough time keeping the old clunker going to get themselves to the work or to the job that they don't even get to go to, because Governor Newsom has the entire state shut down because of false COVID ID testing. Just to put the ice cream, the frosting, or the cream and the cherry on top on the ice cream here, the total cost of this operation would be around $15 billion. And California's broke. So they don't have any money to do this anyway. These people are just nuts. These people are absolutely crazy. This is the guy that's shutting down the harvest, but because he's claiming that there are people being tested for COVID-19. And of course, it's a fake test. And nobody's talking about the so-called deaths due to COVID-19 anymore, because they realized that nobody's buying that. And the true story came out this week, of course, as I mentioned, that the CDC has downsized their death toll from 200,000 down to 9,000. Every place you look, you find scam upon scam upon scam. It's time to drag these people out. And as I said, sharpen up the blade, and the old the guillotine should make a comeback. And I know people that are talking about it. I'm just repeating what other people are saying. Hey, so I've got about 20 minutes here, and I'm going to talk about a topic. This is a listener wrote in and asked, where does Earth's water come from? And this is a very interesting topic, because I just made a commentary into a research group. And someone had raised the question in this research group. It's typically dealing with people with PhDs, university, or industry people. And someone asked the question about the mathematics or the modeling of atmospheres of planets. And so I'll just go through some of the details here, some of the basic mathematics and how you calculate what size of a planet would actually be able to maintain an atmosphere of a certain size. And then there's a couple of idiosyncrasies here. But I'll start out with the really impossible, remember that if you're old enough, the Rocky and Bullwinkle show, and there was Mr. Peabody, and they had the one little, they had all these little skits they would do. They had Boris and Natasha, the Russian spies. But Bullwinkle the moose would have this improbable science hour and kind of a little thing where they'd go through something. And of course, it came out completely bogus. But anyway, that's what we're dealing with, especially with space science today, where scientists still are claiming this original idea came from the 1700s, if you can imagine that, almost like bloodletting, but in the scientific sense. And they claim that the planets formed from clouds of dust that collapsed and formed all the planets 4.5 billion years ago. And of course, that number they pull out of the rabbit's hat, and basically based on nothing. If they can repeat it enough times, they get a paycheck and life is good. But then the question comes, where did the water and the atmospheres come from? Water on Earth, of course, Mars had water at one time recently, and it lost its atmosphere, and the ancients saw this. The ancients saw it, they recorded it, civilizations from all over the planet talk about Mars being a blue planet, and that one night this thing called Comet Venus came by and relieved it of its atmosphere, also leaving major other forms of destruction on the planet Mars, things that can actually, they're so prominent that they can actually be seen from Earth with a relatively small telescope. Okay, so in the standard story, when rocks and pebbles and little things and dust grains are slamming into Earth at this alleged production state of the planets, they come in with such velocity that when they hit, any volatiles like gases, like water or any other types of gases that might be locked in these rocks would when the rock hits, they become so superheated that the volatiles leave, and there's at high velocity, and they escape, and they never come back. So the process of forming an atmosphere or forming oceans never gets started. It's impossible to get this thing started. So the mystery in standard science, one of the thousands of unanswered questions, is where did the atmosphere come from and the oceans? But anyway, be that as it may, you can go through a physics problem, which I did in college. This is a standard physics problem from somewhere early in your physics career, but somebody was asking this on a blog. And the standard answer is that, take Earth, for example. You have a surface gravity, which is the force of gravity at the surface of Earth, and it's a little less at Venus, the surface of Venus, and it's quite a bit less at Mars and quite a bit less still on our moon. And so it's dependent on a number of factors. And oddly enough, as you get to much bigger and bigger objects, you would think the surface gravity on the surface of Jupiter, as it's at the size of Jupiter, would be a lot more than Earth, but it's not. It's not much more at all. I'm not going to go into that right now, but so let's just talk about Earth, and then I'm going to compare it to Venus and Mars and our moon. Okay, so anyway, here's the situation. Given an atmosphere, given molecules and atoms in gaseous form in the atmosphere, there is a pressure that's developed, and it's called atmospheric pressure. We measure it in pounds per square inch or pounds per square foot, etc., at the surface of the Earth. And that's literally what keeps the oceans in place and the lakes and the rivers and the surface water. And if you didn't have that, if you didn't have that surface pressure, the oceans would just boil away because they would be in a vacuum. They would literally boil away in probably overnight. Literally, all the oceans in the world would simply boil away if you didn't have an atmosphere to hold them in place, with that atmospheric pressure holding them in place. And so there's a number of equations. One of them is energy distribution curve, and it's called a Maxwellian curve. There's other names for it. But basically, it tells you that the majority of velocities of the molecules in the atmosphere are below the threshold where they would be able to escape. In other words, if something has enough velocity, if you took a spacecraft or a molecule and you gave it enough velocity, it would be able to escape from Earth's gravitational field and go away forever and never come back. And that's called the escape velocity. And that's what you have to overcome if, say, you're going to the moon or if you're going to Mars, etc. You have to overcome that basic velocity to get yourself out and away from Earth. Okay, so at any rate, and the same for molecules. And so up in the upper atmosphere, up in what they call the upper tail, the velocity curve tail, or the temperature, you can also talk in terms of temperature, which translates into the velocity of the particles. You can talk about the small number of particles up there that have the ability to escape. They have enough velocity, so there's this bleeding constantly of material away from the Earth's atmosphere. So one might think that, well, after 4.5 billion years, the atmosphere would simply go away. But that begs the question, well, how did the Earth get its atmosphere in the first place? If it couldn't form when the original planet formed, where did it even come from? Where did the water come from? But don't ask anybody in the scientific community. They can't tell you, and they can't tell you why that once it did come, it doesn't just bleed away and go away, because that's what the theoretical model would tell you. And so it's a combination of the average temperature of the planet, the atmosphere around the planet, and then this upper end of the velocity curve, which is constantly bleeding away and losing mass. And so how does Earth maintain this? But then you have this major contradiction. It's called Venus. And so Venus has a much smaller surface gravity than Earth, not much smaller, significantly smaller, but it has an atmosphere that's 1,000 times bigger and 1,000 times hotter. So what does that tell you? Now let's go back in time. And so what you do is you retrocalculate, going back in time, and we could go out in the future and say, what's going to happen to these atmospheres as they lose atoms and molecules because of this Maxwellian distribution curve of velocities, etc.? What's going to happen in the future? How long is it going to take for them to lose a certain portion of their atmosphere? In fact, how long would it take for them to lose all of it? And you could make calculations, etc. But now the other thing you can do is go back in time and say, well, Venus, because it's got a hot atmosphere, it's got a lower surface gravity, etc., and a much bigger atmosphere, 1,000 times denser than Earth's. Go backwards in time, and then what you're going to find out is that Venus must have had an atmosphere that was like as much as Jupiter's atmosphere. Massive, massive atmosphere, you know, if it was around 4.5 billion years. And so what you realize, well, that story couldn't be true at all, because poor little Earth over here, the next planet out, has a very little atmosphere and is very cool. So how did this happen? How did the planet Venus obtain this unbelievably massive atmosphere? And you know, where did it come from? And Venus' surface is molten. It's like bubbling. It's like oatmeal. If you like, when you make your oatmeal in the morning, say you pour some milk in the oatmeal or water, and you get it bubbling, and where it's going bloop bloop like that. That's the surface of Venus, constantly changing, highly volcanic surface. And so, how did this all happen? Well, the real answer is that Venus is a young planet, and it had its atmosphere from the very beginning, from the comet stage of formation. And the same with Earth, although Earth is a much older planet. And the other issue is that Earth is gaining atmosphere all the time. Our atmosphere is actually getting bigger. So throughout its history, Earth has had some major, major catastrophic encounters with other planetary objects, like big comets basically coming through the solar system. Okay, so the end result is that the concept, this theory that the planets all formed at one time 4.5 billion years ago, is simply bogus. There's no way it could possibly be true, and it doesn't explain even the most basic rudimentary facts. How did the planets get an atmosphere? By that method where things are crashing into the Earth, it cannot get started. So recently, there's been a study that was released by scientists in Standard Science. And what they did is they examined rocks. And they said that a certain type of space rock had a certain percentage of hydrogen and other chemicals associated with it. And they think there's enough of those chemicals in these rocks to account for the Earth's atmosphere. The only problem is that all of those rocks would have to come in crashing into Earth one at a time, and as each one hit the Earth, the volatiles would simply go away because of superheating of these objects coming in at thousands of miles an hour, and it would not build an atmosphere at all. It never could possibly do that. But see, science is so lame, and scientific news reporting is so lame, because they can't ask those questions. They don't ask them. They have a bunch of bubble-headed reporters, and I've seen these people. They're, you know, they get a degree in some textbook subject, maybe a bachelor's degree in astronomy, where they learned a lot of bad science. And then they got a publicist degree of some kind in journalism or something, you know, journalistic studies. And then they go out and start writing science articles repeating what they're told and don't have enough brains to ask an intelligent question, because they're not scientists. They never learned real science. They never learned anything objective. And they can't ask any intelligent questions because NASA is basically Congress-proof. It's a press-proof. Nobody wants to say anything bad about NASA because if they did, they're not going to get another story and they'd be out of a job. So it's as simple as that. They know who butters their bread and they just say nice things. And who's the loser in all of this? The public. Okay, so getting back to the listener's question about where does the water come from on Earth? And the answer is that it's coming in daily from outer space. And we know that, for example, the Noah's Great Flood, the Earth's oceans rose between 200 and 600 feet. That's how much water was dumped on Earth at one time as we passed through the tail of a comet. Now, I did a calculation one time, and remember Hale-Bopp. If you're old enough to remember back in the 1990s, we had a comet that was visible in the night sky, in the daytime sky also, for a period of about 6 years. Very unusual. Most comets are visible maybe for a day or 1 or 2 days, and visible if they're visible for a week or two. That's very unusual, but 6 years is, you know, the world record by far. By far, the Guinness Book of World Records of comets is Comet Hale-Bopp, at least modern comets, being in the solar system visible for a period of 6 years. But if the Earth, given the extent of the comet tail, if that tail happened to have been in Earth's path, it would have taken us about 40 days and 40 nights, day and night for 40 days, to pass through that comet tail. Now that tells you something about the Noah's flood. Remember the biblical story, Noah builds an ark. It rains for 40 days and 40 nights. These are torrential rains, not just a little sprinkle here and there. This is torrential rain, and I don't know if you've ever been in torrential rain. I have. Many times, where it's raining so hard, there's no space between the drops. That's how hard it's raining. It's like somebody's up in the clouds, literally pouring a giant bucket on you, and the water is just pervasive. You can't even breathe. You have to get under something so you can breathe. That's torrential rain, and that's what was going on for 40 days and 40 nights. And Noah and his family. Now, the other interesting part about the Noah story is that he knew that this was coming. Somebody slipped him the information, and he set about building an ark in the middle of nowhere. And modern science, by the way, tries to explain the Great Flood as, oh, just a land bridge broke and some inland sea washed down into the Mediterranean. And so that was the Noah's flood. Well, that's complete gibberish. It doesn't make any sense at all, because why would Noah build an ark if that's what was going to happen? Clearly he had advanced knowledge of what was going to happen. Why would he build an ark? All he'd have to do is move his family up to the high ground. It'd be a lot easier than building a big boat and putting all the animals in it, and he could take all the animals up to the hillside with him, and end the story. There would not have been an ark. But he knew that it was 40 days and 40 nights of torrential rain, and spent years preparing, and of course the people were laughing at him. What an idiot this Noah guy is, building the that ark there, until the rain started to fall. And literally prior to that, the Earth's population was probably about what it is now. 7 billion, I would estimate, maybe 10 billion. But the Earth was highly populated, and it wiped out the population of the Earth, almost all of it. And if you look back just from statistics, you can retrocalculate something I'm rather good at doing, some mathematical analysis of the world population, and it turns out that China and the populations up in India were the ones who fared the best because they were up in the high elevations. And the Greeks also fared fairly well, the early Greeks, living up in the mountains, etc. But the oceans rose by 200 to 400 feet. Well, that's a good portion of the world's oceans and water came in one shot, probably within a 40-day period. And prior to that, also Earth, when it was originally formed, and we don't know when that happened, we don't have any way of estimating the actual age of the Earth, would have had a very heavy atmosphere, just like Venus, at that early stage, and it thinned out. In fact, I would estimate that Earth has lost its atmosphere multiple times. When you see the mass extinctions where the populations go down almost to nothing, to very primitive life, etc., that Earth has had some major, major disasters where, just like Mars, it lost its atmosphere and ocean in a single night, literally. And also Mars is regaining its atmosphere. That is a known measurement, that Mars is rapidly gaining atmosphere again. Okay, so anyway, that was a listener question and somewhat of a rambling answer, which took you through a series of observations and understanding of where the water and atmosphere came from on planet Earth. Okay, I just want to remind you that my education package is now for sale on my webpage. It's the K-12 homeschool education program. It's $199 for the basic package, which is very extensive, and then for an additional fee, one can get the entire package. But that is there. The Grow Towers, now I'm very pleased. People are responding very nicely to the Grow Towers. People want that fresh vegetable, tomatoes, cucumbers, lettuce, herbs, spinach, all of those you can grow in your house. And the power requirement is so low that some people even run them off of a battery and inverter. That's how little power that is taking. And so that's a key, is if people have their storage food. And food is going to become a major issue here very shortly. So I encourage you to take a look at those on my webpage. The education program is there. The water filters, of course, people are buying those on a daily basis. I have a write-up on how to make your own containers, because nobody has any stainless containers for the gravity water filter, so I have a write-up on how to make those yourself. And, of course, the wing generator for those farms and ranches that want to get energy independent, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.